Okay, welcome to that presentation. This one is about a new file system.
It is new.
LogFS, which is a log-based file system.
The log-to-tuple file system.
Yeah. So I'll hand you over to Ewan Engel.
Almost right. Okay. Used to be mispronounced and mistyped in various interesting ways. Okay, this is about LogFS, which is A, flash file system, and B, log structured file system. And more importantly, it is about garbage collection in LogFS, which is the part where most log structured file system projects stop suddenly, and no one hears of them again. And by my count, there have been 3 independent log structured file systems that got everything right except garbage collection, and then, well, one of them is still alive, and 2 of them have basically vanished. One of those actually has some plans to do a successor that doesn't need garbage collection anymore, so it must be something complicated, apparently. And before this talk, also, as of now, there are 4 people that I know of that understand it. One of them is Arndt, one of them is me, and I hope to double this number at the end of this talk. If there's more, perfect. We'll see. It's complicated, so bear with me. First half of the presentation, I will introduce LogFS in principle, so you get the basics to understand what garbage collection is about and why it is hard. And the second half, I will go into the garbage collection proper. First, I was told not to put so much stuff on the slide, but I can't help it. This is what a piece of flash looks like. Well, actually, the top half is what a piece of flash always looks like. The bottom half is what it may look like or may not, depending on which particular device it has. Basically, you have the device split into erase blocks. Those are really nasty because you can only erase the complete block, not part of it. You can write to any 2 erase blocks in any order, as you wish. You can only write to an erase block if it has been erased before, hence the name. And you can partially write to an erase block, say, write half of it, stop, go to a different erase block, write some of that, go back to the first, write some more, and so on. Then there's some flashes that have additional restrictions, like NAND flash, which is organized into so-called pages, which are completely unlike those pages people in memory management might know. So if you get confused, that's normal. Flash pages are usually somewhere between 8 and 2048 bytes, depending on which device you have today. Some devices support partial page write, so you can actually write to less than a page. Usually you can only write the complete page at once or nothing at all. And then there's some really obscure flashes that require you to write in order from the very first page in each erase block to the end. If you take a look at FFF2, which deals with all these flashes, basically there's special code for each one of these restrictions, and there were actually a couple more obscure ones. Some people call it a huge mess. Some people don't. So for LogFS, I basically took all of this and got away with this for some flashes. For all media, I always have the medium split into, well, not erase blocks, but segments, because file system developers are used to blocks being smaller than 16K or 128K, so I want to use a different name. The flash pages are actually called blocks now, which is what file system developers are used to. And having a different name also gives me the opportunity to take a bunch of those and take them as a whole, use them as a whole. So what LogFS calls a segment may actually be 2 or 3 or 5 or 25 erase blocks. And what LogFS calls a block may actually be 5 pages or whatever. should be a power of 2, but it's not an absolute requirement. Okay, and this is the format of Logfs. Basically, you have three parts on the device. The first part is the super block, or rather the super segment, because we cannot really use less than a segment. The second part, which is usually quite small, just two segments, you can make it bigger, is a journal, which I won't explain very much today. And the main part, pretty much all of the device, is the object store, which we shove objects into. And to keep it simple, basically the objects are blocks. Also, inodes and directory entries are added to the object store, but let's just deal with blocks to keep it simple. Each segment, at least each segment inside the object store, is basically separated into blocks. Each of these blocks contains some data, so this is part of some file, usually. And we have one special block, the last one in each segment, which contains the summary. The summary is quite important. The summary contains, for each block, the inode number this block belongs to. It contains the position inside the file, the basically the page index for memory management people, or the position inside the file. So with these two numbers, we know where to put this data, if we have to. Usually we don't have to, but if the file system gets corrupted, we can restore everything from this information. And it is actually not stored in the summary, but you know where on the medium the block is, so you have the offset as well. And these three pieces of information are really necessary all over the place. Also, we have the erase count of each segment, which we use sometimes, and the time when it was written, and some other junk that we don't care about right now. What we care about is the tuple, inode, and position. Basically, this is a big difference to EXT2 and similar file systems. EXT2 has a block bitmap that basically has one bit for each block, and this bit says whether the block is still in use or not, whether it can be reused, allocated, or not. Logfs doesn't have this. For one, writing single bits to flash is something you would rather avoid. So it needs a different method to figure out if this block is still in use or not. And it simply takes the inode position pointer to figure out which file to look at, and it reads this block from the file. If the block read is the block we just wanted to verify, then obviously it is still in use. If not, it's not in use. Very simple. This is the file format, which probably most of you have already seen in some form or another. It's basically what X2 does. You have an inode, and inside the inode you have a couple of direct blocks, so a couple of pointers to direct blocks. When the file gets larger, you need an indirect block that points to blocks. You can go doubly indirect, triply indirect. Actually, I can go quintuply, or whatever it's called, indirect, for extremely large files that no one of you probably will ever use, but file size limit is 64 bits, so who knows, maybe in 20 years it may be useful. But basically, everything we know from X2. What is different again to X2 is the inode file. A couple of other file systems already use it. Basically, X2 stores all the inodes in fixed positions on the medium, which is a fair approach for hard disks. But fixed positions are something that flash people usually try to avoid, so I need to move the inodes around somehow. And I need something, some place to put the inodes that is constantly moved around, and that's, I'll just take a file. It's a file system. Files are cheap. So I have an inode file that contains inodes instead of regular data. So in effect, the file system tree looks a bit bigger. This was just the tree for one file. This is the same tree again for the inode file, and stack those two on top of each other, and you have the complete file system. And everything, almost everything, is stored in the object store, except the very first inode, which is the root of your tree, which is stored in the journal. And for the purposes of this presentation, that's everything that's stored in the journal. That's a bit more, but you don't have to care right now. Okay, the wandering tree. The wandering tree is required for Flash. I can take a different look at this picture. Some of you may remember JFFS2. And LogFS was created because JFFS2 simply wasn't good enough anymore. And JFFS2 was just like LogFS, basically had this structure, except that only the very lowest part of it, the actual data, is stored on the medium. Everything else does not exist on the medium. Everything else we have to construct during mount time in memory. And that requires a bit of time. 3.3 seconds on this machine with a lot of optimizations for half a gig. Imagine that on a 300 gig hard drive. No, better not. So basically, the idea of LogFS was to take this stuff that JFFS2 already had and add a tree to it, which is a nice idea. It makes it fast. You can always traverse the tree very quick. You don't have to create it during mount time. But this is Flash. You cannot simply store something in place. You cannot simply update something in place. If you want to change a small bit of the block, let's go back about here. If you want to change some data in the file system, you would have to erase the complete segment or erase block for Flash. And you lose all the data that's in there, including the data you wanted to update. You could store it in memory, but if your machine crashes in between, well, then you're kind of in a very good position. So you have to move your data away, and that's what a one-way tree is doing. Basically, yeah, an erase block is too large to be of practical use. You could make your block as large as an erase block, but 128K is a bit more than is really useful. You cannot write it in place, or you keep up losing data with every system crash. So you write it somewhere else. In this example, we take the old tree. We take just one piece of data, which is an existing bit in the file, and we overwrite it with new data. Type double colon Q in colon W in Vim, save in Emacs, whatever. First thing we do is we write the data somewhere else. We allocate a new block somewhere on the file system and write the data to it. But right now, this data is hanging in the middle of the air. Nothing is pointing to it. Doesn't work very well. So we need to change the pointer. So we write out a new pointer block. We cannot change it in place because if we could do that, we could change this data in place as well. So we create a new indirect block with an updated pointer and all the old pointers going to the old data. And of course, this indirect block is hanging in the middle of the air, and so we walk up the tree until we change the inode and write that to the journal, and we had a cup of grass. It would have been perfect if we would have just written this piece of data. We need to write the rest as well. That's a bit inefficient, but that's the cost of having the tree on the medium. If you want fast mount times, you need to pay this cost. You can optimize later to reduce the cost, but in principle, that's what you have to do. Okay, this is the first part. We haven't even started with garbage collection yet. We're going to start with that now. Basically, garbage collection is necessary because we write somewhere else, and we have accumulated old data that is still where it used to be, and it's garbage now. It is obsolete data, and we would like to reuse this. But if this data is somewhere in a segment and there's still useful data around, we cannot just erase the segment, or we would lose the useful data. So we have to copy this data somewhere else. That's all that garbage collection does, basically. Afterwards, the segment we just had is empty. It contains the old data, but that has been obsoleted by the new data, which is actually identical, but who cares? And we can erase it all. It would be nice if it were that simple. Also, here's a slightly more advanced example. We have a couple more blocks that we need to copy over. We copy them over, we erase all those segments. And we should remember that garbage collection should free more segments than it uses. We used up one, we freed two, that's good. Remember, if garbage collection ever uses up more segments than it frees, you're dead. That's simple. Everyone remember? Okay. There was this thing in the first half, wandering tree. I think we couldn't just copy the data over, we had to do something else. So it isn't that simple. We have other nodes further up the tree. So this is the data block we want to move. We also have the indirect block pointing to it, the doubly indirect block, triply indirect block. We also have the ANOT file, which I just ignored for this case. It's a simplified case, but in principle, it's the same. And we have to copy all of those over. That's a bit more work. And we want to free the complete segment, so we have to do the same thing for the node B, for the node C, and those indirect blocks are in some other segments that I don't have on my graph anymore. And does anyone see a problem? Okay. This is the position where most projects stopped. There is a brute force approach. You could just copy the stuff over, hold a reference that this segment is actually the best segment now, erase it all, copy the stuff back, and you have some free space in between that you could use up. Very, very inefficient. We want to do better. We want to do... Yeah, what could we do? Actually, it's very simple. We just take a look at the old file, again, ignoring the inode file, the same deal, and we notice all the data is nicely arranged on one level. In red, level 0. All the indirect blocks are on level 1. All the doubly indirect blocks are on level 2. The single one triply indirect block is on level 3. If we have more, okay, we have more levels. And we can use this information. Does anyone know the solution yet? Not you, Arndt? Yes?
Well, I can imagine that you're going to have some locality of the data. So that you try to pick all the data blocks from the same file and from the same region of the file. So then you try to update only one indirect block, even when you might be updating quite a lot of data blocks, and then you've only got a very small overhead. Because they all come from the same area, the same file, so you're not going to generate such a large number of these extra writes. Keep the number of them small.
Yes, that's a good approach. A lot of people have had that idea, but it doesn't work. Because if I write this one and I take a couple other blocks, let's say this, this, and this, that are underneath the same indirect block, A1, then I have to write 1, 2, 3 more blocks. I make more progress in the long term. It is more efficient in the long term, but in the short term, I just use 3 segments instead of 2. It's even worse. And the solution is actually even simpler, which is probably a bit astounding. Okay. This is the definition. What is the level? We have seen that on the picture. And the solution.
In that definition, if we could go back to that diagram,
yep.
back one more. There we are.
Yep.
Your definition says the nodes are on the same level if their distance from the root node is identical. Does that mean that the direct data is actually a level, is actually a different level to the rest of the data? The one indirect, and then and a different level to the two indirect. So the one indirect blocks are actually on the same level as the direct data. Is that what you're saying, or are you actually starting from the bottom up?
It is whatever you prefer. You can take both approaches. Both approaches work. And
I'm just saying that diagram doesn't seem to match the definition you've got on the slide.
The actual slide I had before had the exception for exactly this case you mentioned. In principle, the definition holds. You can make an exception for the indirect blocks that you point to directly. You could also point to these blocks through 1-3 layers of indirect blocks. It would be the same thing. If you have a B-tree in your file system, you would do with this. I think in the case of a B-tree, it's even more obvious that you want to start from the bottom and not from the top, because the B-tree always grows another layer at the top. So you don't want everything to move down. You want just one thing to be added.
Yes.
So it's your decision. As long as any data that is on a certain level stays there and doesn't move around.
Right. So you're the actual thing you wish to maintain constant is the fact that once you've written a particular piece of data at a certain level, so that will stay at that level indefinitely until it's deleted.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So this is the solution. I guess few people understand it so far. You can take a longer look. I guess you will still have problems. Let's go back. If life is really simple, like in JFFS2, and we have just a single level, we can just move the blocks around, and we don't have to update the tree. And this is exactly the situation we have at the very top level. We can just move those blocks around. And we can always do garbage collection on the top level without any problems, and we always make progress. We clean up all the garbage on the top level. After we've done that, we go to the next level and do some garbage collection. Maybe we always have to walk up the tree, so we may create some more garbage. During garbage collection, we actually may make a regression. Long term, it will be progress. Short term, it may be a regression. Now, if we do that, we know that all the garbage we create will be on the top level, which we can garbage collect for free. Cool. What's two levels? What about three? We can just go down to the third level, level one, third level from the top, do some garbage collection. We create some more garbage because now we have a longer chain to the root node. And if space gets tight, we need to stop on the third level and go back to the second level or the top level, and so on. We can go all the way down. And this is really only necessary when the device gets full. If we have enough space, then who cares? Long term, we always make progress. Short term, we may dig ourselves into a hole. And the nice trick is, actually, we need only one segment, and a bit maybe, to be able to do garbage collection on the top level. Perfect. We need two segments to do garbage collection on the second level. If we run out of two segments, we only have one left, we go to the top. Do some garbage collection, go back to the bottom once we have more free space, more free segments. And so on. We need n segments free for n levels. And we can have as many levels as we decide. More levels means we can support larger files, fewer levels, smaller files. And that's it. That's simple.
And the bottom level never regresses. So once you get to the, if you've got three levels, when you get to the three level and you're progressing through, you'll never regress on the third level because you can only ever create garbage in the second level. Is that correct?
you never regress by doing garbage collection. Mm. You can regress by doing regular writes.
Right, but wouldn't the process of collecting garbage and moving data on level 3 possibly invalidate require you to actually write new direct blocks with new pointers to that data in level 2?
Yes, it does.
And so that itself could create garbage in level 2, so you can regress in level 2, as you said.
Yes.
But level 3, your bottom level was always going to proceed, always make progress. You can never regress at the bottom level. Is that
correct?
Am I understanding correctly?
It is. That was actually fairly quick.
It seems like there's going to be cases, admittedly not happen very often, but when you're going to push back between a number of levels and rewrite the same block a number of times, you may actually be less efficient than the method you didn't like, which was to juggle a little bit and then slap them back down into the same space. Remember you were saying about mm-hmm. you didn't like the disefficiency of juggling, but I can see you're going to have a disefficiency anyway of this up-down tree. I mean, not happening very often. It only happens when you're right against the wall anyway.
In principle, yes. In practice, pretty much no. Once I implemented this and separated all the blocks I write to different levels and had several segments open for writing, I noticed that the total data I was writing was going down significantly. Basically, before... Do we have a chart? You don't? Okay. Well, do we... Yeah, is there anything? Do we have a pen? Okay. Basically, before I was writing to a segment and writing a block on level 0. Then, working up the tree, I wrote a block on level 1, 2, 3. Afterwards, let's make this a bit bigger, I was writing a block on level 0. And writing a block on level 1, which happened to be identical with this block. Wrote a block on level 2, which happened to be identical. You get the picture. So I created huge amounts of garbage in this segment because all the higher layers of the tree kept getting overwritten. They were turned into garbage, except for this and this. So I had a couple percent of interesting data and a huge amount of garbage in every segment. After I separated, I had segments full of useful data, full of valid data, and other segments that were completely garbage. I didn't even have to do garbage collection anymore. It was for free. Not doing any work is lazy bastard. Says a lot. If in some of my test cases, if the file system gets really, really, really full, garbage collection does take some time. And it may make sense to do a special case then and go to the approach I usually don't like very much.
But that won't happen very often. It's mostly right that you
A different solution would be to either tell your users not to use that much space or just when you create the file system, allocate 2%, 5% of space that is never going to be used for this. So you won't ever hit the case. That means your device will be 5% more expensive on average, but it may be a good trade-off. If you are really tight on space, you will burn your cache quicker. Your lifetime will go down. If that's the same trade-off for you, maybe that's what you want.
How do you do word leveling?
In principle, I take the regular write path except that I have a read-write path that regular write path reads all the blocks from the top until it reaches some node, writes this node, and writes all the nodes on the top. Read-write goes down as far as necessary, which may be to here. Read-write the same node and goes back up. It's basically the same path. It's actually code duplication. It is too complicated to have it in the same function as it's already a fairly nasty one, but it is basically the same in different color.
Have you done any work or given any thought to actually performing some of the garbage collection in memory, and in order to collect some of that and reduce the number of regressions that you have to perform?
I have. Although very limited, I'm still deep in development. Basically, I used to write the blocks up to the inode. Then I write the inode and all the way up until the inode file is the master inode is written to the journal. Now I stop at this level. The inode is made dirty, and I wait for the virtual file system to tell me to flush the dirty inode. That helps a little. I should stop at every single layer and just dirty some block in memory and write it whenever. Immediately if I'm mounted with OSync or something similar, or whenever memory pressure hits, or the sync daemon. Arthur?
I still don't understand, really. How do you do wear leveling? How do you make sure that one array block is not used much more than the other?
Oh.
Because in case of flash,
wear leveling.
More important.
I think I misunderstood the first question. Okay. Wear leveling right now I don't do at all. And in the future I will basically take a heuristic of which block to pick next for writing. Right now the heuristic is which block is empty. That there are not enough empty segments. Which segment is empty? If there are not enough empty segments, do some garbage collection. In the future, the heuristic will be more like which block is either empty enough or old enough or has a low enough erase count. All those three go into the decision, and basically you add three numbers and whichever ends up being higher.
Okay, but if you will have erase count, then how do you maintain a data structure which... Where do you store this erase count? Will you need to scan your flash to fetch this erase count?
Yes.
So you end up with the same what Jeffers should do? No.
No. I don't have to be perfect for wear leveling, do I? So I don't have to scan it on every mount. And I can... I can just walk through the file system, segment by segment, and take a look at it. And if it is a good candidate for rewriting, I pick it. If it's not, I go to the next one. And I store which segment I use last in the journal. So I don't start from the beginning on every single mount. That would be stupid. And basically, I rotate through the file system, through the complete medium, but I only take a few segments to look at every time, and then when I have a segment to use, that's fine. If I need a new segment, I scan a little further, but I don't do a complete scan every time. That I wanted to avoid, yes. And I had that until half a year ago, three quarter of a year ago. That was, it's easy, it's simple, but it's not efficient, sure. My approach is getting less efficient when the file system gets full. But again, the plan is to maintain a small cache in the journal. So I have a couple of good candidates prepared and I do incremental scanning. I spread all the work over the complete usage of the file system, not the very short time of mount, where I do all the work, and then a long time of using the file system where I don't do any work at all. That's what JSFS2 does right now. I spread it. The amount of work doesn't change very much, but it's not when it hurts.
In the end, you need only one free segment to do garbage collecting to be very inefficient, but that's it, isn't you? Let's say you have garbage only the lowest level, you collect one segment, copy it. Now you can use that one segment to collect the level above it and keep moving upwards.
I am not sure if I understand your question correctly.
I say with just one empty segment, you can do garbage collecting.
I believe the answer is no, but maybe it is yes. Let me explain it. When I do any writes that come from user space, I usually have to write extra data, which is the only thing user space provides me with. User space doesn't know about any of the metadata at all, which is good. So to do this right, I need to have a free segment on this level. If I don't have a free segment on this level, I take a new one. But maybe I have to do garbage collection. And if I have to do garbage collection, I also need a free segment on every single level on top. So by moving this block, I also have to write a block on this level. And on all the levels on top. So I need one free segment for each level.
So when you have a free segment, you can use it for other levels, can't you? You can move.
The trick is, if data belongs to the same level, it is in the same segment. If data belongs to different levels, you take a different segment and you never mix.
But once it's segment related, it can be used for other levels?
Yes, sure.
So if you're going to do a garbage collecting, some segment is going to be empty and can be erased and use it for upper levels?
Yes, sure.
No, yes, but then with only one segment for the lowest level, if you garbage collect, then one segment is empty, erase it, use.
Maybe the confusion is I need to have one usable segment for each level. If this segment is freshly opened and contains just one block, then all the rest is free and I can use that for garbage collection, which is fine. If it has just been finished, it's completely full, I need a free segment. And I don't know, I'm lazy, I didn't do the extra math. I just assume I need one extra segment for each level. Simple, brute force. Maybe I can actually get away with less, but I'm not going to save single segments. Logitech was designed for caches of gigabytes and more, and it will still work for somewhat smaller caches, but if you go very small, use JFS2. It was designed for small flashes. Logitech was designed for big flashes. And then again, this question, this method is getting inefficient when I'm running out of free space. I can basically get the Tower of Hanoi method where I do garbage collection on this level. I have to move up, move up, move up, move down, move up, move down, move down, move up, move up, move down. It's very inefficient if that happens. And I can make sure that it never happens if I take some more free space. So I simply won't do the math and say I need one segment per level. Simple. Plus whatever is currently in use. Is that a sufficient answer for you? I'm a lazy bastard. Sorry.
I was just doing some mental calculations here, and again, it's the wear-leveling question again, but with a different thing. My understanding is every time you write some new data, you're going to hit the super inode at the top, which means you're going to have to update it, let's just say, in around 64 bytes, and you've got a 1 gig device. That would imply you'd need about a 64 meg journal, because you're going to do a million writes on the rest of the device. You'd need to write the super inode a million times if you're going to do wear-leveling.
I need a large virtual journal. It needs to be virtually very large. That's a smart trick. Basically, a journal is a wraparound buffer. We just have entry after entry after entry, and you reuse it. And yes, Flash requires you to, or Flash manufacturers only guarantee a limited number of erasers. So if you reuse it too often, you may have problems. And for this method, I simply use a second journal. So I have entries that I reuse, 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 and I have the first journal that points to the second journal.
So what you're saying is, to make it run fast, you just do an indexing array, a two-level tree or something, so you can search for the inode quickly.
This is not to make it fast. To make it fast, the journal needs to be small. Because on mount, the master inode can be anywhere in here, so I have to read it all.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what the SLS2 does, except that the journal is actually the complete device, which is slow. So keeping the journal smaller than the device, makes it fast. But it also means that this area of the journal is getting more writes than the average block. So the journal will die fairly soon, which would be rather unfortunate. So if I have used up the journal to some extent, I simply move it somewhere else. I allocate a different journal. Use that instead, and have to make sure I find it unmarked. So I take the first journal, I have a new pointer. And then if you multiply 100k by 100k, you end up with a fairly large number. So it's good enough. More? Do we still have time? It's the last one, so.
How do you keep track of free segments? How do you know that the segment is free or not?
I don't. The very simple answer. JFFS2 has so-called erase marker. Whenever a segment is free, it is actually erased, and then it writes a small erase marker into the segment. And on mount, if it finds the erase marker in free space afterwards, or all FF afterwards, it knows this is a free segment and will be. I have a small amount, actually no. Right now in my current code, I have zero free segments that I know about. I have as many free segments as I have levels, because that's my reserve. But on top of that, I don't know about any free segments. When I need a new segment, I do some scanning, and if I find enough free segments, that's fine. And that is currently kept in memory only, not in the journal, which is still to be done. But if, say, 50% of my device is free space, or actually not free space, but garbage, old data that was deleted or overwritten through garbage collection, I don't bother knowing which part of the device is free. I just, when I need something new, I look a bit ahead, and if it's free, I use it. If it's not free, I may do garbage collection or something similar. And I plan to have a very small buffer of free segments to use, basically to make sure that I don't have to look very far ahead. And if there's a large area of non-free segments, I can just skip over that and use up my buffer and then find some free segments again and fill the buffer again. But that's just a small amount of data, and I want to keep it small. I don't want to know about everything in the file system.
So what you're saying here is that when you're basically out of space, you've got to scan everything you want in the file system to find a new one. Even if
In the worst case, yes. I think there's one other part that's missing for you, which makes you go, what the heck? What ZFS2 does is it knows how many segments are free, which is its basic heuristic to decide whether it allows further writes or not. I simply have a counter in the superblock. No, I have a counter in the journal because I cannot write the superblock, which tells me how much space I have used so far. I have no idea where the space has been used. Yeah. If the file system is completely, absolutely to the very last bit full, then LogFS can become slow, yes.
You don't have to be full. Of course, you have terabytes left.
And say 50% of it is full. And you are so unfortunate that you, for example, scan 20 megabytes or 200 megabytes, it's still huge delay.
Yes.
So it's unscaled.
It scales fairly well. What you can do is, A, for every segment you need, you scan n segments. Pick any n. If n is 1, then you may hit a hard problem. If n is 5, you are on average a bit slower, but you look quite a bit ahead for better segments to use. Then you keep a small buffer of n segments. You keep a buffer of the best segments you found by looking ahead. Multiply n by m, and you know how much bad space you can skip by using this buffer. And if your file system gets large, n and m should get large, but it's the square root. It scales better than linearly. I don't have a perfect solution to this problem yet. If anyone does, I'm interested. But at least square root is better than n.
Lazy bastard approach won't work in here. It's kind of complicated.
Yes, it is. I mean, after I have reinvented so much of XFS, maybe I should take a look at your file system design and see if there's something I can not reinvent but actually copy. They are on my list. Yeah. B-trees make a lot of sense for directories. Actually, Neil Brown has done already. He explained to me that they are really required because of some nice little feature in ReadDir and SeekDir and TellDir interaction. It's a complicated case. I won't go into it here. But I basically need a B-tree if I want any performance with large directories. That's simple. Yeah. Yes. But so far, flashes are small. The largest I've seen are 64 gigabytes flash devices, which is a bit larger than the disk I have in my laptop, but smaller than what you must be used to. Yeah. okay, the last thing I could try, this is actually the first time I have tried it ever, and either everyone has to come up to the front or we have to somehow use the camera, and then we won't have any sound, is actually mount LogFS on this little cute computer someone sent to me. I've never tried it before. I have just done the setup and got it to boot from the USB key half an hour before the talk. Last minute preparations indeed. And if it works, it should show a mount time of less than 3.3 seconds. Or it may blow up in interesting colors and you all get to laugh at me. should we try to set up the camera? Is that possible? Okay, everyone come. Everyone who wants to see it should come up. The screen is small, so. I've been developing in QEMU basically with a memory simulated device all the time, which was very fast. I can, from fixing a line of code, fixing a bug, to running my first test case, I have about a minute, which is nice. It's great for development, but it's not the ultimate test. Okay, first test is actually boring. It's mounting the flash inside as JFFS2. And right now it takes 3.288 seconds, which is extremely well for what JFFS2 used to be like.
Yeah, 50 minutes.
Yes, the worst mount time I've seen with my own eyes was 50 minutes or thereabouts. Slow device, slow bus, bad device driver that I get to be blamed for. And actually, I had to run around with my laptop open and get called by the police whether the laptop was stolen. Anyway, unmount it. So it's the same again with LogFS.
This is MakeFS, right?
LogFS, okay. LogFS currently has MakeFS and FSCheck inside the kernel. I disabled FSCheck so it wouldn't take too long. Basically, FSCheck does a complete scan and more, so it's even slower than JFS2, at least I guess it should be. But you shouldn't need FSCheck too often, unless you are a developer and break your file system every now and then, which I do. And attempt to write not page aligned. Okay. Blue smoke, you get to laugh at me. Sorry.
It was fast.
It was fast. But even if it's too fast, very fast. So, okay. Everyone laughed at me and I'll try to fix it sometime during the conference. Sorry, didn't make it in time.